Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to On the Ball with Rick Bucher. Here's your host.
Might send it over to Rick Bucher.
Rick Bucher.
This is On the Ball on the United WeCast Network, and I am Rick Bucher. You can see me on FS1, hear me on Fox Sports Radio, and you can read me on the Fox Sports app and at foxsports.com. You can also follow me on X, the former Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at Rick Bucher. I'm a lot of places, but there's only one place you can hear me talking about story angles and perspectives that you are not likely to find anywhere else, primarily, but not exclusively, involving the NBA. And that is here. So, the Golden State Warriors' season of craziness has come to an end with the play-in tournament loss to the Sacramento Kings. And now the question is, where do they go from here? Klay Thompson is about to be a free agent. Chris Paul has 1 year left on his contract, a non-guaranteed $30 million. Both Jonathan Kuminga and Moses Moody are eligible for extensions off their rookie contracts this summer. Stephen Curry and Kevon Looney are eligible for contract extensions as well, but Looney is signed through next season, and Curry has 2 years left on his deal. This topic came up on one of my TV appearances earlier this week, asking the question whether the Warriors should break up the big three or not. And I said that they should not, unless they were going to break it all the way up and trade all three, Stephen Curry included. And when I said that, my colleague, James Jones, Bay Area native, former wide receiver, great for both the Green Bay Packers and the Oakland Raiders, pushed back by saying if they did that, then they wouldn't be playing for championships anymore. And I said, that's probably right. And he then said, so they're going to play for fun? And I made the mistake of essentially saying yes. What I should have said is, no, they're going to play to the best of their ability to earn their paychecks and win as many games as possible, which is what roughly 25, 26 of the league's teams in any given year are trying to do. There may be a few less that aren't just playing to make revenue, hopefully make the playoffs, provide some entertainment, get all the ancillary benefits of having a pro team. But never forget, this is a business. Bottom line, it's a business. And competing for a championship isn't always the most profitable way to run that business. And the Warriors would be in that place where, yeah, probably wouldn't be considered championship contenders. But you can go through every year. There are plenty of those teams. There's no shame in that, particularly if you're a team that has been a championship contender for as long as they have. The idea that if a team isn't playing for a championship, isn't going all out for a championship, then it's shirking its duty or underperforming is simply not reality. The vast majority of teams in most professional sports are not playing for a championship in any given year. James Jones actually played for one in the Oakland Raiders. When he was with them, he knew the second he got there, they weren't a championship team. The Green Bay Packers, for the most part, when he was there, they were. That's what he was used to. And maybe that's what inspired him to ask the question. And he just conveniently forgot what that Raiders what that Raiders experience was. Or he thought, much like some other, I remember my first conversation with BJ Armstrong after he left the Chicago Bulls and ended up coming to the Golden State Warriors, which is where we first met. And he was shocked. He was like, is this the way the rest of the league operates? Because he was used to the Bulls situation where they were playing for a championship every single year, operated with the mindset of we are playing for a championship every single year he was there. It was a rude awakening for him. And maybe it was such a rude awakening for James that he completely just erased it. But the vast majority of teams in most professional sports are not playing for a championship in any given year. They're playing to entertain their fans and make as much money as they possibly can. And for teams with payrolls like the Warriors, that means making the playoffs and getting that added postseason revenue. The Warriors, of course, didn't make the playoffs this year, so the question now is, what do they do to make sure that doesn't happen again next year? Not the whole leap to how do they become championship contenders again. That's a bridge too far. And what's funny is this is our show and this podcast are not the only places where that conversation or this topic has come up. What I've realized is there is a formula at work here when it comes to the suggestions or predictions about what the Warriors are going to do to prevent next season from ending in similarly disappointing fashion. And this is the formula. The further someone is away from the team and less familiar with the mindset of the key figures, the more unrealistic and outright crazy are their proposed solutions or predictions. Here's the reality. The Warriors' chance to pivot and continue to be contenders without taking a step back already has been used. They were fortunate enough to have the number 2 pick in 2020, something that normally does not happen with teams that already have a championship nucleus. That happened in large part because of injuries to Steph and Klay's injury, Kevin Durant leaving, basically fell to the bottom of the league without losing any of those pieces. Generally, that's what happens is guys retire or they get traded or they move on and you simply don't have the nucleus. They had the nucleus. It was just in hibernation. So thanks to that nucleus being largely injured for the 2019-20 season, they wound up with the league's worst record and a trip to the lottery. Now, they missed out on having the top pick, but as Curry, who represented them at the draft lottery, said at the time, number 2 ain't bad. And because they could have fallen as far as 5th in that draft, in the way that the lottery works. And then thanks to a shrewd trade with the Minnesota Timberwolves at the 2020 trade deadline, they picked up Andrew Wiggins and the Timberwolves' 2021 first-round pick in exchange for D'Angelo Russell, Jacob Evans, and Amari Spellman, and the Warriors' 2021 second-round pick. I still am amazed that they pulled that deal off. Kudos to GM Bob Myers. So they used the 2021 pick to take Kuminga, the Timberwolves' pick. They took Kuminga with that. And then the Warriors still had their pick, which, with them finishing 7th in the West, but then losing both of their play-in games to the Lakers and Grizzlies, nail-biters both, if you remember, they had the 14th and final lottery pick and took Moses Moody. Now, this is pure hindsight. But just imagine if the Warriors had, instead of taking Kuminga, had taken the player that went number 8, 2 picks later, Franz Wagner, who is now with the Orlando Magic and in the playoffs. And instead of taking Moody at 14th, they had taken Alperen Sengun, who went 16th to the Houston Rockets. Both Wagner and Sengun have skill sets far more suited to playing in the Warrior system. I'm not a big LaMelo Ball fan, but imagine if they had taken him instead of Wiseman. They'd be looking a lot different right now, wouldn't they? And I'm not going to say the Warriors screwed up because I didn't call for them doing any of that at the time of either draft. I had questions about taking a James Wiseman who really didn't have the skill set as a big to play in their system. But I thought, okay, maybe they're moving in another direction. Maybe they see something. He was so raw that maybe they saw his ability. He had the ability to develop those skills. But in any case, you imagine LaMelo Ball, Franz Wagner, and Alperen Sengun, we'd be looking at this team in an entirely different light. There's no way that they're in the play-in this year as a result. They could almost play through those guys alone and make the playoffs. So I'm just pointing all of this out because there was an opportunity to avoid where they are right now. What I'm tired of hearing is that Steve Kerr, head coach Steve Kerr, is to blame for Kuminga and Moody's slow development, that he's afraid to play young guys. No, he's not. The Warriors system and Kuminga and Moody not developing their individual skills fast enough is the reason for their slow development. Maybe it was simply that they've worked as hard as they can to develop, but they had such a long way to go to have the skills necessary that it's taken this much time. The reality is, to make the most out of those two, as Kerr did in the first half of the play-in game against the Kings, they can't run the offense to feature Curry and Klay or allow Draymond to be a playmaker. They can't play their normal system, the system that won them four championships, that took them to six finals. You have to put the ball in Kuminga's hands, and you have to give him a steady diet of having the ball. He's not coming off the bench and doing what Chris Paul did, orchestrating the second unit. Now, the idea that Kerr is against playing young players has no basis in fact. He had no problem playing Jordan Poole right out of the gate and giving him meaningful minutes in their championship run. He started him at the beginning of the playoffs in place of Stephen Curry. And then as the series, as the playoffs went on and Poole's effectiveness diminished, then Steph and the rest played a bigger role. But Jordan was able to play within their system. Now, he had the benefit of having a team that wasn't playing for anything the first year that Poole was there. So Poole and Eric Pascal got a lot of run. Remember Pascal? Yeah. Remember how they gave him all the room they could? And then ultimately found that if they were going to go where they wanted to go, that they had to get back to playing more accomplished players. I'm not even sure that Pascal is in the league right now. I'd have to double check. He's certainly not getting run. Kerr tried the same with James Wiseman. But there's only so much rope you can give a young player, only so much room to make mistakes if you are trying to make a run at another championship or the playoffs. And so a lot of it was just bad timing for Kuminga. If he had come in the year that Wiseman came in, it might have been a different story, as it was for Jordan Poole. But Kerr made Brandon Pajemski, a rookie, part of the rotation right from the start, and had no problem putting him in the starting lineup for a stretch. No NBA coach, I hope this is clear, no NBA coach, unless you're in a complete rebuilding situation, and even then, no NBA coach just experiments throwing guys into the rotation or the starting lineup to see what works. Especially teams like the Warriors with an array of established championship players. They don't want to play with guys who don't know the system. It makes them look bad. It makes their job harder. And no coach would just change his system to accommodate a group of young players who haven't accomplished anything at the expense of his proven champion vets. Kerr tried to find ways to give Kuminga minutes and a bigger role, since he was offering something that they could use, a super athletic rim-attacking power forward, as opposed to Moody, who arrived as a spot-up shooter, and they had plenty of those. Now, Kuminga was completely lost trying to play the Warriors' established system, both on offense and defense. So, Kerr looked for ways just to get Kuminga the ball last year and let him cook, as they say. But it wasn't producing wins. In games in which Kuminga took 10 or more shots last year, the Warriors were 8-12. And they lost the first six. A lot of coaches would have abandoned the experiment at that point, but Kerr stuck with him. This year, he tried to feature him even more. And it helped that Kuminga had, by this season, had developed a bit of a mid-range game and was playing better defense. But again, the results were not overwhelming. Kuminga had 49 games in which he took 10 shots or more. The Warriors were 25-24. If that's what you're willing to put up with as a fan, a mediocre record and not making the playoffs in order to develop a young player, fine. I hope you're also okay with Steph and Draymond and every veteran who's still hunting playoff appearances and titles. I hope you're okay with them asking to be traded. Because that's what would happen. Kuminga still can't operate within the Warriors system. He'd ideally play the role of Draymond, but he doesn't have the skill or IQ to do that. And honestly, few players do. When we're talking about playing through Kuminga or featuring, we're talking about a completely different way of playing. And that remains the case, as the play-in game showed. There's a reason why Steph only took 5 shots in the first half, and then 11 in the second half, even though Sacramento played the exact same defense on him. Kuminga was who they played through, sort of by desperation as they fell behind early. And granted, he got them back into the game. But he rewarded them with 12 points on 11 shots and only one assist. So if you're thinking that Kuminga could have scored 50 and delivered a win if they had just stuck with him through the entire game, okay, have at it. I have no reason to believe that. There's no basis to believe that. But if that's what you think, run with it. But that's the only way that playing through Kuminga was going to win that game, if they played through him the entire game. Here's a litmus test for anyone who wants to blame Kerr. If you don't know why he did something, or you have to ask, why did he do that? Why didn't he play Kuminga more? Why didn't he do this or that? You don't get to decide if it was a bad decision or not. You've disqualified yourself from judging whether or not it was a smart move because you don't know why he made it. You're just seeing a result that it didn't work that the Warriors lost and are blaming Kerr for not doing something else that you came up with without knowing if that something else could have produced a different result. Because Kerr's decision, I hope this isn't a newsflash, wasn't made out of the blue or without any thought or reasoning. Or what I've heard is like he's just got something against young guys. I've already given you plenty of evidence that that's not the case. He certainly was aware of the option you think he should have taken instead. This is his job. The amount of time that coaching staff spend considering every option, including several that you never thought of, is more than the time the team actually practices. It's what they spend the most time on, parsing out what their game plan should be, what the playing rotation should be, what the minutes dispersal should be, all of it, what units best play together. They study all of that. And so Steve looked at all the information at his disposal, what is his coaching staff is telling him, what Steph and Draymond are telling him, and he made the decisions that he made. But that's all information at his disposal, far more than you or I have. And that's how he decided what his best course of action was. If you don't know what that reasoning was, if you don't have all that information, how can you say it was the wrong decision? How can you say he's not doing the job? How can you call for him being fired? Whether or not a call or a play or a player rotation or a substitution works does not define whether or not it was the right thing to do. the right move doesn't always mean it's a winning move.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Sometimes you simply don't have a winning move in your pocket. Now, all of that doesn't mean that, by any stretch, that Kerr is infallible, that he hasn't made mistakes, that his game plan is always the most ideal one. He is fallible, as every coach is. And when he makes a decision that those of us who are around the team pretty much all the time don't understand, or a lot of the time, I should say, we ask him about it. And he answers. He not only answers, but he admits when maybe he should have tried something else. That is a rare, rare trait of a head coach. You know what? It's a coach that is also confident that he did explore every option and that his reasoning was sound and why he went the direction that he did. We get nervous as human beings when somebody spring something on us that we hadn't considered. Or at least I will say I get nervous. When somebody says, well, did you think about this? And I'm like, no, I didn't. I didn't think about that. And I feel bad that I didn't. And I think, man, if I had considered that, maybe this would have turned out better. Maybe if I had done that, it would have turned out better. We're not doing that with Steve. First of all, I'm talking about me operating on my own. He's got a coaching staff, players, trainers. He's got an array of people that he relies on. And he learned how to do that from the San Antonio Spurs and Greg Popovich in terms of making sure you utilize all the people around you for what their opinions are or their perspectives or their input. But Steve doesn't pretend that he has all the answers, which is what I also don't understand about Warriors fans who want him fired. Who are you going to replace him with? Who are you getting that is going to have the respect of Steph, Dre, and Clay? Who are you going to get who is going to manage those disparate personalities as well as Steve has? And anybody who's followed the Warriors know those are three different cats. You got to handle Steph a different way than Dre and Clay. And I know you want to blame him for giving Draymond too much rope. He should have cracked the whip on Draymond a long time ago. Yeah, if any of you were saying that when the team was winning, then you might have reason to speak up now. But I didn't hear one peep about that when they were winning championships. It was the exact opposite. It was, man, I love the passion with which Draymond plays. I love how he's not afraid to go at LeBron or Steven Adams or any of the other guys he gave up 5 inches and 50 pounds to and still battled as if his life depended on it. I loved his dunks and his primal screams afterward. I loved how he flexed on all. I'm talking about the fan base here. That's all I heard. How everybody loved Draymond Green and his passion and how vital it was to the team and its winning. And I even heard people that were appreciative of Draymond getting in KD's face and challenging him. You had people that after KD left, they were like, oh, Draymond ran him off. Doesn't say a whole lot for KD if Draymond getting in his face ran him off. But I digress. The only difference between then and now with Draymond is that the Warriors are losing, are not collectively as good, and Draymond isn't as good as he was then. He's not as effective as a player. And I can only assume the fans crying for Draymond to be benched or read the riot act or yanked out of a game by Kerr are those whose personal sports experience stopped at high school, maybe college. The pro level is different. In the same way that when you screw up at work, chances are you're not getting punished or reprimanded. The boss isn't pulling you. Is not having you in front of the entire world, in front of consumers, your customers. The boss is not yelling at you, sitting you down, pulling your badge, all of that in a very public way. Maybe your boss is. It's not a very good boss. Not when you're presiding over adults. You're not going to get punished or reprimanded the way you might have for screwing up in high school or college, sports or otherwise. The protocol is simply different, as it should be. What I really don't get are the fans, well, I don't know if it's really. Another thing I don't get are the fans who believe the media is somehow protecting Steve Kerr. You know who's protecting him? Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Kevon Looney, Mike Dunleavy Jr., after Bob Myers. And so what you're saying, if you think Steve Kerr should be fired, or that he's the reason the team is losing, is that you know how the team should be coached and run better than a trio of four-time champions. You know more than Steph. You know more than Draymond. You know more than Klay Thompson. Can you grasp how utterly arrogant and uninformed that is? And yet I see people putting that out publicly all the time, and probably will even after hearing this. They will still say, yeah, I don't care. Steve Kerr should be fired. It's inane. And I'm sure some of you are thinking, yeah, you know what? Steph, Klay, Dre, Kevon, they're all just too close to Steve. It's sentimental. Which, if you believe that, you don't know how dedicated Steph, Klay, and Dre are to winning. They won under Mark Jackson. Mark Jackson believed in them. You could say he, in many ways, helped build them. Mark was the first to call Klay and Steph the best shooting duo in the league, well before they actually went out and proved it to everyone. Mark is the one who gave Draymond, a second rounder, his shot, supplanting a guy with a much greater pedigree and making a lot more money in David Lee. And yet, when ownership decided it was time to move on, that Steve could take them where Mark could not, did any of those guys stand in the way? They were sad to see Mark go. But did any of them say, no, Mark is our guy? He's done so much for us. If you're going to fire him, trade me. Did any of them stand on sentiment then? No. So why would they be so soft as to protect Steve if they thought he was standing in the way of them winning another ring? The reality is, they wouldn't. If there's any one person that has let the Warriors down, and I don't believe it's one person. I believe if it's one person, it's Father Time. You just don't stay on top the entire time. The more you win, the more you have to pay people, the less money you have to spend elsewhere. The chances are you're going to overspend a little bit to retain people. And then they get older and they're not as good. And the rest of the team figures out what it is that you're doing that makes you successful. And they find remedies. And so the hill gets steeper as you get older and physically breaking down more. It's a natural course. It's the circle. That's the circle of life. It's the circle of competition in sports. But if there is one person that has ushered in where they are now as much as anything else, or anyone else, I would have to point to Andrew Wiggins, an incredible talent. He showed how good he could be in the championship run. He was arguably their second best player. And he could have, or should have been, in my mind, the linchpin to extend the Warriors' title contention the way Kawhi Leonard did for the San Antonio Spurs. I'm not making a direct comparison. I'm not saying that Andrew Wiggins is as talented as Kawhi Leonard or that he was ever going to be a finals MVP, but there are a lot of similarities between the two of them in terms of their games, their quiet natures, their just supreme size and athleticism, their physical ability. What's different is Kawhi's work ethic and the appearance that he's never been satisfied. I can't say the same for Andrew Wiggins. By all appearances, he got his ring, he got paid, and he stopped trying to expand his game or playing as if he had something to prove. He was coasting or maintaining. And for where the Warriors are, they couldn't afford that. They needed him to continue to grow. Because if you look at him and his natural gifts, there's more there. They got more out of him than he had ever given in Minnesota. And yet, I feel as if there is still greater potential, untapped potential that he's never realized. Now, I know he stopped. I know he missed time because of his because of health issues with his family. And there is no shame in that. And maybe he's even lost his enthusiasm for the game as a result. Maybe he looks at the game different. I'm spitballing here. But we have to face it. He wasn't the same player before those issues with his dad's heart came up. And he hasn't been the same player for a full 2 years now. And it coincides with when he got a ring and he got a fat new contract. And the contract was an objective clearly top of mind for him based on his and Poole's celebration and social media post. And getting another big fat contract was very much hanging in the balance when he got to the Warriors. People wondered whether he was worth investing in. And then he helps them win a championship and the way that he helped them win that championship made it easy to give him that contract. But I had my concerns when they gave Jordan Poole that contract. Less so Wiggins. I thought he'd turned the corner. I even told him so. I said, you know, I didn't think you were a winning player in Minnesota. And you've proved me wrong. You're a winning player here. And he was. But I can't say that he is now. And like I said, I'd say the same for Poole. A ring and a contract had him acting like a made man here with the Warriors, which at least in part resulted in Draymond cold cocking him. I still can't go over anyone defending Poole for dissing Draymond the way that he did and thinking he wasn't going to get socked by Draymond Green. If there's a solution, by the way, to giving Kuminga a bigger role and resolving the Warriors' cap issues, which owner Joe Lacob has said he's committed to doing, one of the key moves is going to be moving Wiggins at this point, even if it's pennies for the dollar, and give that role to Kuminga. Because it would also be an addition by subtraction role. You don't know what you're going to get from Wiggins, but you're certainly not going to get what you're paying for. They started Wiggins over Kuminga in the play-in game, and he repaid them with the worst plus-minus on the team. A minus 25, 12 points on 11 shots. When they had a chance to take some momentum into the fourth quarter, Alex Len from the Kings getting charged with a flagrant foul for a reckless closeout on Wiggins on a three-pointer. It gave him three free throws and the Warriors the ball, thanks to the flagrant foul, with 5 seconds left in the third quarter, trailing by 16. And I don't know about any of you, but I'm thinking, oh, here's the opening. He makes the three free throws. It's 13. You hit, even if it's a two, you get another bucket, down to 11. That's a big difference. Maybe even 10 if you hit a three going into the fourth quarter. But Wiggins missed the first two free throws before making the third. And maybe, probably, it wouldn't have made a difference. But that little episode felt like the Wiggins experience this entire season. Every time they looked to him for a boost, he disappointed. Over the course of the last 2 years, he's posted career lows in almost every category. And he's 28 years old in the absolute prime of his career. If you're looking for solutions, that's where you should be looking. Not changing out the coach. That's so lazy and it's so uninformed when we consider what Steve Kerr has done and what the alternatives are. That's all worth thinking about. So maybe, just maybe, before you post another hashtag fire Steve Kerr or Kerr's got to go or Kerr's the one who's bungled this whole thing by not playing Kuminga and Moody, understand exactly what you're saying and what the consequences would be. All right, that does it for this episode of On the Ball on the United WeCast Network. Please rate and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And I am happy to hear from you guys, good or bad. I want to hear what you think about the podcast and the subjects and the thoughts that I deliver directly to some of you in terms of talking about fan behavior of particular teams or perspective that I think is just not always the most well-informed. Sorry to break it to you. All right. We're in the heat of the playoffs now. There's plenty to talk about. And we will get some results, some game one results. And the first one is Lakers-Nuggets. Can't wait to see where that goes, whether that's going to be a series or not. I have an inkling that we're making the same mistake we made last year when we thought it was going to be competitive because we put so much trust in LeBron James and Anthony Davis and the Lakers mystique. But we shall see. And that may be the subject of the next podcast. If not, some other playoff element certainly will be. In the meantime, as always, thanks for listening.